Welcome to SRG Offscript, the podcast where experts at Succession Resource Group unpack the latest industry trends, recommendations, and observations for independent advisors managing their practice. With no fluff and a little entertainment. In each episode, we'll discuss ways in which you can understand and leverage the value of your business, grow your business through M&A, but also through an optimized organizational structure, improve and protect your business to create a sustainable enterprise that can hopefully outlast you, and lastly, preparing for your eventual retirement and how to maximize that result. So, we encourage you to listen in with whatever beverage suits your preference, and let's get to the forefront of industry trends with a fresh perspective to help you achieve your business goals. Welcome back. Excited to talk about recruiting and building the next generation of talent inside of an advisory firm. This is a topic that is something I don't feel like necessarily gets enough airtime, but it is starting to become a bigger and bigger topic at conferences, the work that we do, working closely with advisors. I think the evolution of the advisory practice is driving how the next generation of advisors is being prepared, where they're coming from. And by that, I mean, as I look back to the work that I did back in the early 2000s, working with independent advisors, it was really focused on working with, I'll call them practices for lack of a better descriptor, not a good or bad label, just simply a label in that most of the advisors at that point, they had great lifestyle practices. They were growing, they were hiring, but things were still relatively simple and straightforward. Over the last 20 years, then fast forward 10 years, you started to seeing a lot more teaming, advisors coming together, but really kind of loose-knit teams. These siloed organizations where there might be three or four of us as partners, but in reality, it's really three or four separate distinct businesses with a shared brand name and maybe a shared office, back office staff. So we were together, but separate, and we started to have some economies of scale, more intellectual capital. We certainly, from the outside looking in, looked bigger to a prospect, to a client. Fast forward to where we are today, and you're seeing now those loose-knit teams actually start to turn into integrated practices, integrated teams, ensembles, if you will. Lots of different names for the same thing, but you really have teams coming together now where there aren't three or four separate distinct practices all under one roof. There is one set of workflows, one set of systems and processes, and everybody executes on it. They might have their various roles, obviously, especially as the firm grows. Job descriptions, job roles, all these things begin to narrow over time and become more specialized, which then makes it a little easier to hire. So we're seeing this evolution of the practice to a business, business to an enterprise, these truly integrated teams. Well, along the way, we've also shifted from where compensation was and where the next generation of talent came from 10 and 20 years ago. So to unpack each of those individually, on the compensation side, when you look at how advisors compensated their team members, and I won't even say staff, I'll just say team members more generically at this point, 10 and 20 years ago, and even still somewhat today, it still holds true, but more in a legacy format than somebody intentionally building it at this point. But it's still prevalent, and that is revenue-based, grid-based compensation. Bringing on, hiring somebody, and then paying them out 30, 40% of their production for their book, and 30 or 40% of the clients that you assign to them. Very common model. It might be 20% in some cases, it might be 40% in others, but regardless, it was a percentage of the revenue from the clients that they were responsible for servicing, and the goal was then to mentor and train them up to a point where they could go start not only servicing the current book, but use those current clients to get new clients, referrals, additional investable assets, and they were expected to go hunt. So 20 years ago, 10 years ago, this was still relatively common, where when folks were hiring, they were looking for this hybrid hunter and farmer, as in hunters, business development focused, nurturing COIs, seminars, marketing, if you will. They were sourcing prospects, cultivating leads, closing business. And then you had the farmers that were responsible for servicing clients, operations, systems, processes, both mission critical roles. Can't have one be successful long term without the other. But you really had a lot of these sort of hybrid roles where you had folks who were generally statistically, they were farmers. They were really good at servicing clients. They're really good at operations, really good at technology, fill in the blank. What they were not great at was prospecting and business development. And that was a complaint for the past 20 years of most folks trying to bring these people in. They couldn't cut it. And ultimately, they would just end up staying farmers. Well, they were farmers from day one. So you had the compensation plan design 10, 20 years ago was very, I'll say, rudimentary. It couldn't fail, which was nice because they got a percentage of whatever they brought in or whatever they were assigned. But rudimentary in that they were paid like owners without actually being owners, really. And then you have, where did those folks come from? How do people grow their practices at that point? Where do they bring talent in from? I can assure you at that point, 10 and 20 years ago, it wasn't consistently from universities, colleges. They weren't training new talent. They weren't hiring interns. Some were, but the vast majority were not. What they were doing was looking to recruit. They would work to find somebody at a wirehouse, at a regional bank, their broker-dealer, their OSJ, their custodian, the RIA they worked under. Somebody would help them source this talent, or just a traditional recruiter. But what they were looking for was somebody who was 30, 35 years old, plus or minus, that they had a small book of business, they could service clients reasonably well, and they had some propensity to be able to prospect. That's what everybody wanted. That's what everyone tried to recruit. And the problem was, as you then start looking at these practices turning into businesses into these more evolved enterprises, these integrated teams, it is the compensation plan design for these integrated teams can and has to be different. Compensation drives behavior. When we pay everybody to be a hunter, we can't be surprised when they're not doing and focusing on the farmer-related activities, as in taking care of the existing business, which is what most folks now are looking to hire, they're training for, and what they're building compensation plans around. So you have both how they were paid 10 and 20 years ago, dramatically different than what we're seeing today, and where we source that talent from, dramatically different. How we train that talent, dramatically different. So one of the major challenges we saw 10, 20 years ago, and even today when it pops up, is when you bring somebody over and you get lucky enough to find somebody who, I'll put air quotes around it, young for our industry, still coming up in the business. They're licensed, maybe they have their CFP or other various designations you deem important. They've got a small book of business. They've demonstrated the ability to service the clients and even do a little bit of prospecting, maybe not as well as you do, obviously, but they can do it. The problem with those folks is, number one, if you can find them, and that is a big if, and if they are as good as advertised, number one, it's going to cost you. You will be paying more because these are ready-made advisors. They may still need some mentor and training, but they're ready to hit the ground running, generally speaking. So number one, it will cost you more. Number two, oftentimes these folks, I don't want to say they have bad habits, but they just have different habits. And sometimes those habits are bad relative to how you operate your organization. Last but not least is, again, remember when they showed up, they had a small book of business. They knew how to service, they knew how to prospect reasonably well, at least they had some propensity to be able to do it. After a couple of years of mentoring and training and working alongside you, guess who they don't need? You. And so you end up having to work really hard to keep these intrapreneurs inside your organization, and unfortunately, very often they end up spinning out, leaving, and taking some clients with them, or clients follow them out the door. That has been shifting gradually for the last 20 years, frankly, but pretty dramatically in the last 5 to 10, it seems. And that's what I really want to focus on today is, from a succession perspective, where are advisors finding this top young talent, the next gen, Gen 2, Gen 3, to join their teams? How are they creating integrated practices that ultimately drive enterprise value? Number one is sourcing the talent. When we look at these firms that are, I don't want to say the biggest and best firms in the industry, but they're the top 10%. I'm not talking exclusively about the multi-billion dollar RIAs, aggregators. Yes, they're out there and they generally have also hit it out of the park on this stuff. But I'll stick to this, the Main Street advisor. They've got a couple million in revenue, maybe 10, 20 million in revenue. When you look at these firms, and they are well-oiled machines, they can scale the business. It is, I don't want to say it's complicated, but the way they've been able to do it isn't complicated. Yet from an outsider's perspective looking in, you look at these firms and think, man, where are they getting all this great talent from? I struggled to even get good receptionist, let alone good advisor or producer, hunter or farmer, operations person. Like, they really, really struggle with this. As it turns out, especially through the succession evaluation work that our team does, we get a chance to look under the hood. And what we are consistently seeing and finding and have noticed now for a couple of years, and frankly have used internally, is they aren't finding this top talent. Again, they might occasionally get lucky and find somebody who shows up with a great resume, decent amount of experience, but demonstrated ability to win, and we'll take them. But again, keep in mind that they are going to cost more and sometimes can be a little bit more difficult to manage. But those are the exceptions. When you look at these firms that have all this great young talent, their farm team of talent, if you will, the outsider is scratching their head wondering where they're getting them. That firm has been investing for years in their pool of talent, as in they actively, as the founding advisor or advisors, they work intentionally to build a non-owner-operator business. Now, again, it's aspirational. They may never fully get there, frankly, by choice in many cases. But most of the advisory businesses in our space, it is led by an advisor or a team of advisors, founders, and they have a support staff underneath them. But that business could not exist long-term without those owners showing up Monday through Friday, at least 8 to 5, to take care of clients, to prospect, to manage people. They are owner-operator businesses. The firms that are having the most success and that have these pools of talent that everyone scratches their head and wonder where they're getting them from, they are intentionally building the business so that someday they don't have to be there. Well, that means ultimately they are working to push stuff down, which is not news to any of you listening, frankly. All of us as business owners have done this to some degree. We just eventually stop doing it because it gets complicated, gets hard. But initially, when you start your business, you, me, everybody listening, you know, your chief cook and dishwasher. Phone rings, you answer it. Accounts need rebalanced. Markets are moving, being volatile, you rebalance. New client meeting, you prepare, you close. Everything is on you, but eventually you have enough success that you can hire somebody to answer the phone so you can focus on the other stuff. So you see this pushing down of the simpler duties over time automatically, but we got to carry that through all the way to pushing you as the listener, owner, to the role of CEO, or at least make that the aspiration. Bringing that full circle back to where do we source talent? How are these bigger firms having success with this? They are being very intentional about building that farm team of talent. As in, most advisors, most business owners, frankly, would view a lot of these new hires just as a straight expense. Like, it is purely a negative. They're bringing some young intern out of college, paying them $35,000, $40,000 a year. They're not there for a full year necessarily during their internship. But that intern comes in, they mentor, they work under you and get mentored. They'll shadow, they'll do some administrative stuff, but basically, they're just taking up space and frankly costing you money, but they don't really contribute a whole lot. But then they graduate, they come back, they join your organization, and now you pay them $65,000, $70,000 base salary. And guess what they contribute now? Now that they graduated, they've got their degree, they're getting ready to sit for the CFP. Now you know what they really contribute? Yeah, a whole lot of nothing, unfortunately. Again, now you're out $65,000, $70,000 a year, and maybe more, maybe less, depending on your respective markets. You're, again, you're mentoring, you're training, you're having them shadow with somebody. You are investing time and effort in them and paying them, and they're producing nothing. They're contributing nothing. And you get through the first year, and now maybe, you know, they're taking on some administrative tasks, helping with meeting prep, notes during the meeting. Again, not stuff that really justifies $65,000 or $70,000, but they're still contributing and they're learning. But by year two, by year three, whether it's you mentoring and training them, or if you have a junior that works under you, that junior that you trained and mentored is working to train them. And eventually, let's say, keep it simple, it's you. You mentor, you train them. They're just eating up your money and your time. But by year 2, 2.5, you can actually have them lead some of the C&D client meetings with you still there. By the end of year 3, they're handling some of those C&D client meetings solo. And you're actively now deferring to this person, even though you certainly have the better answer if and when a client calls in. You're deferring to the junior advisor on your team because, well, number one, we need to from a scalability perspective. Two, we've got to set them as a colleague in the client's eyes, which means being intentionally deferential and pushing those questions back to the advisor you've got dedicated to working with them, but you don't disappear. And so by year 3 or 4 now, this person is servicing C&D clients. They're being reasonably productive, again, with clients that they can't really do too much damage with anyway. But all they do is service these C&D clients. They have a base salary at this point that generally tracks with the amount of assets we have them servicing. They have no bonus for sourcing new business. That is not what we want them focused on. It's frankly not what they're good at. They would be a danger to themselves and others. And so we don't even want it to be part of the equation. But when we look at our, and we've talked about this before, but I'll repeat it. When we look at the appropriate enterprise ensemble practice compensation plan, the BBP, the base bonus profits, they have a healthy base. It is based on the amount of assets they're servicing, which is the clients that you have pushed down to them to free you up to go do other things. They have a bonus. The bonus would generally be tied to new referrals from those existing clients, i.e. do a really good job with these clients and you'll get paid more. You get a percentage of first year, for example, from those new clients. And new investable assets, net flows from the existing households. Like that is the bonus component. And the profit component, we can start looking at and talking more later, but we do have some variable compensation that is based on their individual performance and contribution, their individual wins. And you got variable compensation for how the team does as a whole. Not that they have a huge impact on that, but we want them thinking about it. We want them watching it. So when you look at this sort of systematic training model where you can get eventually out of being a dedicated owner operator, it is bringing in this junior advisor, investing in that talent for a couple of years, pushing some of those D clients down and then C clients down. And eventually you'll start noticing, and you'll know this, they'll be getting near 70, 80% capacity. And our job is to make sure as we get close to that point that you're bringing in the next intern or 2 interns, because the odds of getting it right with each first hire is statistically unlikely. We bring in an intern or 2. Again, they don't do a whole lot, but we find 1 or 2 of the good ones and we have them start shadowing this junior advisor that you've been mentoring and training. They help support this individual. Their job basically as the junior advisor is now to help do what you just did for them. Mentor, train this individual with your tutelage and assistance. So now there's 2 of you helping do it, 2 different perspectives, more time and attention available. With the end goal being by year 2.5, 3, the junior advisor can be pushing C&D clients that you gave them down to the new junior advisor. And again, everyone's still here, everyone's still involved, but now those C&D clients are getting even better service again. Like their time and attention focused on them keeps going up every year. It never really diminishes, which is rare for C&D clients, but you can do it profitably in this model. And by virtue of being able to push those C&D clients down, because they've been mentoring and training as they got near capacity, you can push maybe some of the smaller B clients down to that junior advisor, because they now have some newfound free time, which frees you up to do more mentoring and training, to do more prospecting, to bring in more business. It's a model that is ultimately more replicatable from a compensation perspective and operationally. So when we talk about where they're finding this young talent, they're not finding them, they're building them. They're investing. And they take one on the chin for the first couple of years because you know, and I know, you're not going to get every hire right. It'd be wonderful if you did, and kudos to you if you have been. But ultimately, you know, the secret sauce to getting great talent is hire, fire, hire, fire, hire, fire. And eventually you'll find someone who really sticks, who fits your culture. They're a go-getter. But you're probably not going to get them the first time. So it's that old saying, hire slow, fire fast. But they're investing in that team of talent. They're spending the time to mentor and train. They're having 2 people in every meeting where you only need 1. So it's wholly inefficient. but it's an investment. When you view it as an investment, it goes from being inefficient and an expense to being an investment and part of your long-term strategic plan. But we need that strategic plan. What are we trying to build? And that's why I say a lot of the practices nowadays end up kind of stagnating where they were doing this. They were pushing work down. They stopped answering the phone. They stopped with the meeting prep. They push that stuff down and they get somebody who can specialize in doing just that one or two things all day long really, really well to free them up to go do other things. But that cycle can never stop. And so the beauty of that model is that I just described is number one, it is scalable. Number two, it helps drive enterprise value because we're not paying a percentage of top line revenue. We're not even paying a percentage of the profits to these folks. BBP, base, bonus, profits. But again, the profits are not just simply profits that you get as an owner. It's some way, shape, or form of getting them to think and act like an owner, like a profit pool that you carve out and allocate to your team. You also find that type of compensation model, that type of system and process of mentoring and training, it will be your cheat code to sourcing talent, to keeping talent, to growing your enterprise, where so many other firms are out there trying to bring people in and give them a few clients that they'll seed them with. And the expectation is then that you're going to go prospect and build your book of business. I got to tell you, having talked to a lot of these younger advisors at conferences, a lot of the next gen groups that I'm a part of, I love these study groups and helping support them because they are the future of our industry. Their, I don't want to say number one complaint, but certainly in the top three is the compensation plan. The lack of career tracks. These folks are generally pretty darn achievement oriented, and they come into these organizations that will give them a few clients. If they're lucky, a little bit of mentoring and training, and then your job as that junior advisor is to go build your book of business. It's the Ed Jones model. Your job is basically to go start knocking on doors, calling your family, soliciting business, and if you can, you'll make it. If you can't, you won't. When in reality, it is a huge missed opportunity where most of these folks are farmers, or at least they are farmers initially. They can be or already are really good at executing on your service model. But it means you need to be dedicated to documenting that, creating your workflows, your systems, your processes. And again, bringing it back sort of full circle. When you then look at bringing these people out of college, I talked about it being your cheat code to attract and retain talent. It really is, because right now it seems like our industry, the only people who intentionally leave college and go into our industry at this point are the folks who they don't get the application approved to go teach English in Korea. Like it is the backup for the backup for the backup plan. Like everything else fell through, didn't get the internship. So I'll go sell insurance or I'll go sell financial plans. I'll take this commissionable job. The only commissionable job kids coming out of college want these days is software sales. And most of them get ground to a nub even in that role. Our industry is so much better for them, short term and long term, but we got to start rethinking how we mentor, how we train, how we compensate, and spending the time to invest in your talent, not bringing on producers, not trying to pay them a percentage of revenue, not trying to build, you know, basically a smaller new broker dealer model, which is what so many of us as advisors grew up in, but getting away from that. You've been hired, you've grown your book of business, your job is to build your business, which means we don't need more of you. We need people to support you, to free you up, to go spend your time on the highest and best things you could be doing, which is generally mentoring, training, because you know things that nobody else knows from your experience, and it's prospecting. It kills me when I go sit down and listen to our team talk about succession planning or talk to folks at conferences. And they're ultimately talking to us about trying to scale their business, all the success they've been having with growth, but how things are slowing down now a little bit and they're trying to get refocused, look at maybe acquisitions to speed things up. When in reality, the reason they're not growing as fast anymore is because when they were smaller, a relative term, obviously, but when they were smaller, they had more time to go prospect. And then they get bogged down with bringing in business, servicing business, can't do both of those full time. If you have any ability as the founder, CEO, to mentor and train and replicate what you know and can do, or you have the ability to get out there and elephant hunt, to prospect, to bring in business, Those are unique skill sets. You can't go simply hire those things. But what you can't hire is somebody to execute on your process that you have built and documented. That you can get, and you can get it for generally pretty cheap. Again, relatively speaking. And I say relatively speaking in the context of, if you can bring somebody in, and I'm going to shoot for the moon here. Let's say you shoot to get somebody in here that can take care of your A clients. Great to mentor and train them, and over 5 or 10 years, they grow into that role. But let's just say you try to jump the shark here and just hire somebody that over time, with maybe 12, 18 months of working alongside you, that they could competently and capably service your best clients. That's going to cost you probably $300,000. It might be a little more, might be a little less, depending on, again, your market. But let's just say it was $300,000. If it cost you $300,000 to finally offload the day-to-day servicing of those A clients, your VIP clients, that's, let's call it $160 an hour with benefits. And so my challenge for advisors, or any of you, frankly, listening, thinking about your strategy as CEOs to build your business, where you want to get it, is looking at the allocation of your time and the highest and best use of that time. So the question would be, if you spend any amount of time sitting in on client meetings, God forbid prepping for client meetings, talking to clients on the phone, yes, I get it. You might like doing some of these things, but us as practitioners oftentimes hide behind these things. If you spend any amount of time doing that, the question is, could you spend your time doing things generically that generate more than $165 an hour of value? And I got to think the answer is yes. Granted, you're listening to a podcast that is recorded. This is a very one-side conversation. So for sure, a rhetorical question, but even when I ask that question in a room full of people, I don't even wait for an answer, because the answer is undoubtedly yes. And if the answer is no, well, it should be yes, which means we need to get you out there and get you back to what you did when you started, which is prospecting or mentoring and training your team. Like, those are such unique activities that we can't easily go hire for. Now, granted, I get it. Not everyone listening may want to be the CEO. And eventually, if you get big enough, you can go hire an outside CEO. But bottom line is, you started this business, presumably, if you're listening to this podcast, again, SRG Offscript, we generally talk to independent advisors, independent business owners. You started the business. It is on you. You are the CEO, whether you want to be or not. And so the beauty of it is, in this industry, all you really need to be able to do to be an effective and competent, capable CEO is be able to document and replicate what you have done to get you to where you are, and be able to prospect. My guess is you're probably pretty good at one or both of those things. And over time, with the right mentoring and training, you can get people who are really good at just a few of those things. And it's that old saying, what got you here won't get you there. What you're looking for from a succession perspective, just to bring this thing again back full circle to the work we do each and every day, on succession planning or creating sustainable enterprises, it really is about trying to make sure that you can someday take your foot off the gas and that the proverbial car doesn't slow down. That requires us to have Gen 2 and Gen 3 advisors on the team and ready to go. They don't have to be carbon copies of you, where they are pretty good at a whole bunch of things, which is what you have to do as an entrepreneur. Website breaks, you better figure it out. Want to start a podcast? You better be the one to do it. Marketing plan? You better design it, or it ain't happening. Referral, CY, it's all on you. Rebalancing? Yep, you too. Which means you have to be a jack of all trades and pretty damn good at all of them. The challenge is, when you start thinking about the succession work that we do, what we end up finding is founders are juggling 20 or 30 balls over the course of the year. They didn't realize it necessarily, but you start with one, get clients, and then you get clients, and then you got two balls. Get clients and service clients. And you're successful at both those things. You don't have time to answer the phone and prep for the meetings. So now you hire an admin person. And now you got 3 or 4 balls you're juggling. A couple years later, you've grown. They want benefits. Now we got 5 or 6 balls. You get to be 50, 55, 60 years of age in this business with a couple of years under your belt, and you're juggling 20 or 30 balls without even trying. But the problem is, you're not great at juggling 5 balls, you're pretty good at juggling 20 or 30. If we can work to mentor and train the next generation, begin to narrow the scope of their roles and let them be experts in the marketing or the operations or the client experience or the investment strategy. We can get a team underneath of us. And to be fair, you probably need, in most cases, 2 to 3 successors for every founder. But that's how we get to the next stage, the next evolution of these businesses. So when you look at hiring and training and recruiting, sure. Recruit. If you can find somebody who shows up as a ready-made successor, ready-made advisor to join your team, and it's not going to cost you a ton of money, fantastic. Take the home run where you can get it, but don't rely on it. Also, recruiting should never stop happening, whether it is recruiting as in like hiring a recruiter or recruiting as in you always have your eye out for good talent. Even if you don't necessarily need them, good talent is hard to find. And so that is an activity like sourcing deals with M&A. It never really stops. You may supercharge it at times when you have a hiring need or you really want to focus on acquisitions, but it's always percolating on a back burner. And so it is about finding that next gen talent. But my recommendation, and I think you'll find this to be true when you look under the hood of the industry's biggest and best firms, certainly those that are most profitable and efficient, they didn't find their talent. They built their talent. They brought in people that you would look at and think, the hell did they hire that person? They have no skills, and you're correct, but they have a work ethic. They have desire. We're looking for PhDs, basically, coming out of these bachelor programs, PhD, somebody who's poor, hungry, and driven. That we can work with. That we can build around. That, ultimately, folks, is how we scale these businesses. It's the next generation, and it's how you build a business that truly has enterprise value. The crappy part is, it requires you to occasionally and more regularly over time as you grow this thing, put that annoying CEO hat on where you start thinking, what exactly does a CEO do? I know how to service clients. I know how to grow this business. Growth is part of it, but scalable growth, replicatable growth that could continue on past you. That's the CEO's job. Creating the job descriptions, not for where you are today necessarily, but where you want to be as part of your strategic plan. Again, as we start to narrow these roles, we have job descriptions. We can put that all together on the whiteboard and we can actually start to create career tracks. We have career tracks and we have job descriptions, give or take with them, and they will evolve over time. Your 1.0 version will look nothing like your 2.0 version any more than it will 5 and 10 years from now, but you start somewhere. If you have job descriptions, you have a career track, you can then do pay bands. All of a sudden, you start looking like a real enterprise. And when you go hire your next person, it gets easier and easier. When you want to post for that role, it becomes very easy. You can clearly define what it means to be successful and wildly successful in this role and have a compensation plan that rewards and incentivizes that behavior. Those are the activities, the requirements, frankly, of building a truly valuable enterprise, as opposed to operating a lifestyle practice. Now, I will close this out by saying, if you're listening to this thinking, that sounds like a lot of work, I have no desire, you are not wrong. Number one, that you may have no desire, but more importantly, that it is a lot of work. Like a lot. And it's not always going to be fun. There will be days where it will feel like you're running an adult daycare. Like, but you stay the course, you continue to make the investments. Long-term, these things pay off. It's very difficult to compete with them. However, it is possible to compete with them. I still see those lifestyle practices where they are intentionally simple, lean, and mean. Those are also hard to compete with. So my takeaway here that I'll leave you with is, number one, focus on investing in your talent. Build that farm team of talent. It will help you in so many ways, scaling the business, your opportunity to buy a business that's maybe outside your immediate region. If you've got great young talent on your team, you can put somebody with boots on the ground in there. The upside is hard to measure, but you got to have those people and you got to be mentoring and training. And the problem is, like all things in succession, these things take years. But if you're consistent with it, it's going to be really hard to compete with you. So focus on either building your enterprise and being very intentional with building that farm team of talent so that someday you cannot be there and the firm continues to operate. It's really cool when it happens. Or be at the other end of the spectrum. Be lean, mean, simple, wildly efficient, If it isn't prospecting or client service related, you don't do it. Now, granted, the succession alternatives, the values will be very different for these two types of firms, but both are very, very competitive in the market. It's the advisors who get stuck in the middle, that they don't get big enough to truly capitalize on any of the expenses that they've had, but they're not as simple as they were when they had that lifestyle practice. So they've got a lot of headaches, but they never really get to the point where they come out the other side, where they get the efficiencies, where they've got this team that can operate independent of them. So just avoid getting stuck in the middle. Commit to building your enterprise and have a voracious appetite to get there. It will take an investment in your talent. You will not get it right always. But if you stay the course, the talent is out. I mean, there are folks who want to come into this industry, but we need better compensation plans. We need career tracks. That one thing that I think CPA firms, law firms do better than we do in this industry. And it's not a long list. It's just really, it's the career tracks, the pay bands. They are very systematized because they've been doing it a long time. We can get there too. If you can focus on building your enterprise or building your very lean, mean lifestyle practice, you will not only enjoy the exit process, but you will get more out of it, both in terms of value dollars, but also warm and fuzzy side of things. So I'll leave you with that. Focus on making sure you don't get stuck in the middle, build the enterprise, and please, on occasion, be intentional about grabbing that CEO hat off the shelf, putting it on, and working, as uncomfortable as it might be, to spend as much time and effort as the CEO as you can. It's going to be a really uncomfortable transition, frankly, going from being an advisor full-time to CEO full-time. It might happen over 12 to 18 months for you, and it will be the most uncomfortable 12 to 18 months of your life. It might happen over 4 or 5 years as you gradually push work down and find yourself now with just a few clients that you still see, mostly because you're just hanging on to them. Your team could service them really, really well, but you're reluctant to give them up. But again, the journey to get from being a full-time advisor to being a full-time CEO, it is turbulent. It is uncomfortable. But when you get there, you will not look back.
And that concludes another episode of SRG Off Script. I hope you found this episode both interesting and valuable. We encourage you to check out our website at successionresource.com, or of course, connect with us on social for the latest happenings at SRG. If you just can't get enough of SRG Off Script, we invite you to join our monthly Q&A webinar, SRG Off Script Live, where we address your questions sparked by the latest podcast topic. Finally, if you enjoyed today's episode as much as we did recording it, please leave us a review and tell your industry friends about us. Your support helps us continue to bring you the best content possible. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Succession Resource Group. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice. Always seek the advice of an expert with any questions you may have. As always, we at SRG stand ready to help when you're ready.